Welcome to Refirement Life, the podcast for anyone navigating life transitions or planning to make life transitions to ensure your next years are your best years. Listen in for insightful, generous, and sometimes humorous conversation. It's time to get fired up with Christine Zamuda and Muge Wood, your hosts for this latest episode of Refirement Life.
Hello and welcome to Refirement Life. This is episode 75, and today we have a very, very special guest and longtime colleague, longtime friend, and someone I immensely admire, Jamie Tozzi. I want to tell you a little bit about Jamie, and we're going to spend some time today talking about the skills that leaders need to differentiate themselves today, tomorrow, in the fast-paced world of AI. So about Jamie, Jamie is a transformational leadership coach, speaker, and former Microsoft executive known for turning high potential leaders into high impact ones. With 24 years in the tech industry, including two decades at Microsoft, Jamie helped grow the Dynamics business from 100 million to over a billion and led that sales organization to record-breaking performance as Microsoft's North American executive leader responsible for it. A multidisciplinary leader across sales, marketing, and partner channels, Jamie's trademark is simple: people first, results always. She now coaches and advises leaders across Fortune 100 companies, high growth tech firms, and the public sector. Jamie also serves on the boards of Gladly, Innovate, and Trident Construction, and hosts the podcast Executive Access, where she offers insights to help ambitious professionals accelerate their growth. Welcome, Jamie.
Thanks for having me, Christine and Muge. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And I'm excited just to continue the conversation and listening to your podcast, Executive Access, which I encourage all of our listeners to cross-pollinate and follow. This will be a natural conversation. We're keenly interested in how to help leaders anchor on those differentiating skills that make us innately human and powerful as leaders. So looking back at Microsoft, you led a huge sales organization to breakthrough performance. When you look back at those days, what role did human-centered leadership play in your success and the team's success?
It was literally everything, Christine, because looking back now, I'm so grateful. It was a huge incubation business. It was not a core business for Microsoft, the business that I was in and you are in and Muge was in, called Dynamics. And so it always felt like we were swinging above our weight, so to speak. You know, with the, we were not the leaders in the market. We were the underdog competitors. And so we often had to just figure things out as we went. And I look at, it was a really challenging time, but I look back and I say, wow, I'm so glad that I had that experience, because at some point we just all started looking at each other and saying, you know, anything is possible. So how are we going to break through and make this happen? As a leader, I think I at first felt like I had to have all the answers, and that's how I led. Like, you know, what if somebody exposes that I don't have all the answers? The real breakthrough, I think, for me and therefore for the business, was when I realized it's actually not about me. You know, my job is to help set a vision, help motivate and encourage and describe the outcomes that we're looking for, and then unleash the creativity in others to go help figure things out. And once I was able to really, frankly, be lazier in my leadership and my expectation that I have to be the expertise, you know, the expert in everything, the team came up with all the answers better than I ever could. And we created almost this culture of the small, mighty team that was doing outsized things. And I think that's where the creativity came in, the ingenuity came in, the you know, experimentation came in, all anchored in, you know, sort of a growth mindset culture. So I would say there's probably a lot to unpack there, but that was the biggest experience that taught me, you know, anything's possible. We got knocked down a lot. I like to say, I guarantee I have lost more deals than anybody on this call, probably on the universe. So I have definitely learned from mistakes quite a bit. But we were super successful because we just iterated and believed that we could solve problems, if not, you know, if not right now, not yet, then eventually. So it was super fun.
Yeah. I think that's an aha moment for a lot of maturing leaders. You said it when I knew that I didn't have to have all the answers. And then I saw from my own experience and witnessed the team coming forward with more. That for me also is kind of a turning point for a lot of leaders, for myself as well, when you just start thinking, I need to hire smarter.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Hiring smarter. And, you know, just literally today, I was working with a CEO who gotten promoted into his role as CEO, and he came from one of the business lines. Mm-hmm. And he shared with me that he felt bad for one of the leaders that he didn't come from that business line. He said, you know, I don't really feel like I'm giving that person or that business, I feel like I need to become an expert. Like I'm not helping them as much as they need to. And I was like, you need to reframe how you think about that. Your expertise is how you're seeing, you know, broadly across the business. Your expertise is in how you solve problems, how you start thinking about people, the questions you ask, right? The curiosity that you're able to have about the business. In fact, sometimes that expertise can become a hindrance on us. I remember one time I had been in the Dynamics business a long time, and there was this new, really smart person came into the business from a different part of Microsoft. And she said, Jamie, I have an idea. And she threw out this idea. And I sort of like mentally rolled my eyes. I was like, yeah, we've tried that like before. That was like a 10-year ago, you know, idea. And that will never work because it didn't work before, when I should have been saying, okay, interesting. I see you have this idea. Here's why it didn't work in the past. How are we going to, you know, do it in the future? So anyway, I think, but to your point around hiring, I think that that is one of the key parts that a leader really needs to work on is, do I have the right people around me, the people that complement my skill sets? And then as we talk about the future of AI, or the now of AI, actually, how are you a little bit looking forward looking and thinking about the kind of skill sets that you need to both hire for and train your team for, and start working on those now so that you don't get caught flat footed as well?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what you guys mean. I have all the answers all the time. I just ask Copilot and it gives me an answer and I run with it. No, but kidding aside, this is, I think, a profound era of literally nobody having all the answers at any point in time, based on the pace of change and transformation. And one thing stood out, Jamie, in our prior work that I always remember that I think is relevant to this is you sort of pioneered an approach, a simple but a powerful approach, to get everyone's input and asks into a single place where everybody felt like they could contribute, they could raise what they observed, but then using it as a single basis to connect up multiple organizations to weigh in towards a solution for problems that matter. And I think that was a key catalyst among many that helped us, you know, drive the business forward. So what stands out in my mind is creating the forum. And I think regardless of the technology, the tool, not only hiring the talent, but also creating the forum for the talent to contribute inclusively can be a differentiator.
It is really, I laughed when you said, you know, everything. I've embraced this idea that I don't know a lot. And I just sort of wear that as an identity. Because if I know that I, and you know, it's not a confidence thing, I'll say, hey, I'm really good at what I do, but I'm going to be better, even better next year than I am today. And I actually don't know everything. And so what that does is it makes me really curious. So anytime I'm around anybody, it could be somebody that's perceived as, you know, early in career as me, I'm asking a ton of questions. What can I learn from you? And what you're talking about is connecting the dots across an organization. Everybody has one view of the problem or the situation. If you work with customers, you have a very customer-centric point of view. If you work in the product team, you have more of a product point of view. No view is complete. So the magic happens when we start to pull it all together. And much like I tell CEOs that they don't have to be an expert in their business anymore. That was when you owned a function, you have to be an expert. Your power comes from how you're able to connect the dots and all the views together to unlock new insights and to bring people to work together in new ways. And wow, you remember the one list. Muge, I had forgotten about
that. I do. One ask. And we actually have, now it has evolved. It has become more a platform level tool, but we have variations of that. And we call it the loop that orchestrates and connects all the different voices towards problems that matter. So that's what I am, that's what I am remembering. I think, Jamie, you brought up such a key point, and you alluded to that earlier, and that is the systems thinking that is so essential and really tough to do. A lot of merit to being very deep in your domain. I think that's great. But then being able to look at the downstream, upstream effect of that chain and understand the cascading effect of that is really hard to do, but so strategic.
100%. I always say everything impacts, and anything impacts everything. I got that from one of the guests on my podcast. He said that, and I was like, that makes perfect sense. Anything that we do impacts everything. Or I used to say, look left and right and figure out where things connect. You know, that you brought up the one list. The reason where that came from, when I took over leading this, the US CRM, you know, we call it operating model business, I really didn't understand the problem. So I just asked, what are the problems? And I got a spreadsheet back with literally 300 lines of every problem. And I read each one and my eyes were sort of glazing over about all these problems. I'm like, what is this, making sense of this? And I actually said to the team, have you sent this up the chain? And they're like, we actually sent this exact list up the chain and they're not doing anything about it. It wasn't until we organized it, right? So these, you know, at that time, I'm going to like really blow the doors off on the early challenges of Microsoft CRM. But I remember walking into the leader of the business, who was a direct report to the CEO's office, and saying, listen, there's a problem. You know, the product isn't, or, you know, enterprise ready. You're not paying our partners, and you're paying our partners and our sellers more to sell, you know, online. I forget what the third thing was, but all of those 300 items boil down into three major points. Your product isn't enterprise ready and you're not paying us to sell it. You're paying us to sell on premise. And then the, you know, the fist hit the table on the other side. What are you talking about? My product isn't enterprise ready. And then I pull out the spreadsheet, C line 72, 250 and 600. But the point I'm trying to make is communication plays a big part in it as well. How we organize what we're seeing in a way that we can effectively communicate and be heard to actually get problems solved. So step one is, can you get everything on the table? Can you connect the dots on things? And then even if you do those things, there's a piece where you have to communicate effectively so that people can actually mobilize and do something about it. So those things, I think, will always be people-oriented, augmented with help from tools like AI. But it's kind of funny, Muge, as you were talking, it reminded me, I love AI. Like, I've been digging in like crazy, like everybody else. And I just did something kind of easy. Like, I was preparing for an offsite one of my clients wanted me to help them with. And I wanted to design this session that I was going to facilitate. And I had some ideas. I put it in, what ideas do you have? And it's like, I'm talking to somebody, just like I would talk to a business coach that's giving me ideas. But it occurred to me that if I didn't have fundamentally an understanding of what I was trying to accomplish, and I had the experience of seeing what good looks like, if I would have just asked AI to design it, it would have been pretty lazy. It reminded me of like Waze. I don't even know how to get around my town because I just put Waze in everywhere I go. And so it has made me sort of lazy. Like, I actually don't know how to drive from point A to point B because of this tool. And I do worry a little bit about maybe the overuse of AI, and how do we make sure that people are really understanding and becoming experts at their business and the critical thinking behind that, and then using the AI as a way to augment and make them better, right? So anyway, just a thought.
Yeah, it's great to hear that you're using it, you're diving in. I spoke recently to Angela Wallace, the CEO of OmniScience, and she was telling me that the new gender gap in business is the use of AI and the lack of use by women, like dramatically lower than our counterparts, our male counterparts. So just to put a little buzzword or maybe a to-do for anyone who's listening who doesn't feel like yet proficient, get proficient, because it is a critically important skill to have. And as you mentioned, Jamie, if you know how to design prompts and be strategic with it, it can really be game-changing for your business. Thinking of other opportunities, you coach executives and, you know, folks in the C-suite. Are you hearing concern yet about AI, and are you hearing any concern at that level about maybe their job security, maybe not as much at the CEO level, but certainly that next level down, director level? You know, we see in the research that creativity continues to be a number one skill needed to navigate through these changes. Agility, being able to make decisions and in a growth mindset way, like really evolve quickly. And of course, you know, compassionate leadership, that's something that's not easily replaced by artificial intelligence. Any thoughts on that?
So I have clients, they're tech clients, and they're mm-hmm. all talking about AI. And mm-hmm. It's in the boardrooms, it's in the executive suites. My non-technology industry clients are not talking about it as much, and the CEOs. And when I bring it up, it's like, okay, well, how would we do that? And maybe they'll start to use cases, how people are starting to use it. But when I have to say things like, what about putting out a challenge to your different departments around how they can improve one process using AI? Not a lot of biting on that yet, but I will tell you what everybody is struggling with. There is definitely a sense that transformation needs to happen. And every client of mine has a different scenario for that. Like, their business model is changing because of what's going on around them. And technology has in some cases, a lot to do with that. And their team members, particularly organizations that are like longstanding organizations where you have a lot of tenured people, are really struggling to help their teams make the transition. And so I liken this to, while not in every case it's due to an AI scenario, it makes me wonder, well, if this small change, like we're going to roll in a new system that's going to change our work process or something, is causing strife and pushback and, you know, a resistance to change, then I feel like that's like level one. Level five would be how we're actually proactively embracing an AI, right? So it does concern me. What I will tell you is, in working with the leaders, I've been doing a lot of work to say, well, what's that all about? You know, why are people resisting? There's a couple great pieces of work I wanted to call out. One is calling Managing Transitions. It's by the author, his name is William Bridges, and talks about like the change is just the change. Transition is what needs to happen emotionally with people. And the first step is the loss. Like, so people don't fear change, they fear loss. And so, and there's another piece of work around just brain science that David Rock has called the scarf model. Like, when you see people acting in ways that surprise you, like, why are they resisting, right? It has to do with different things. And one of them is the S in scarf, which is status. Mm-hmm. So what I'm seeing is, you know, imagine, for example, somebody who is at the top of their game, they've been in their role or in their business 20 years, and they are the go-to person. They're the expert in that business. When new hires come in, that's who people are going to. And then all of a sudden you're asking them to change the way they work. You're saying, well, why can't this person just adopt new things? The loss for them is actually something really big and personal, which is status. Well, what happens to me now when I don't have that role as, you know? And so I think when you talk about compassion and you talk about like empathy, I think leaders really need to be thinking about, with these changes and us asking people to have a growth mindset and do new things, what is the loss that they're actually experiencing? And can we just be open and honest about what that loss is and lean into that as we try to help people move into a transition into AI? So I know I was kind of all over the place on that, but I've really been dealing with that a lot with my clients lately, and I find it pretty fascinating.
That is really fascinating, Jamie. I was at a breakfast meeting earlier this week. The topic was future of the workforce in age of AI. And as we are discussing, I think we came to the realization that it was almost like five stages of grief when it comes to AI or any kind of change. First, you deny that it's happening. You hope that it passes. I was like, wait a minute, it's not going away. So let me bargain with it and see what job I can move into where I can be immune from it. Wait a minute, it will be touched by everything. So now where can I look for opportunity to flip the script on not what it's going to take away from me, but what it can bring to me in the way that I live and work that actually is ultimately ultimately net new opportunity. And that is a process that, you know, we have to work through. So your points really resonated along that spectrum and the recognition of that.
Yeah. And I think to click down on that too, it's thinking not only recognizing the loss, but understanding the loss. So many of the directives come top down without a full understanding of how does this impact each individual role and what are they seeing? And there's probably an opportunity for systems design and just getting some insight into that before you launch big changes.
100%. I mean, this is where I think the systems thinking really comes in. And as a leader, first of all, your own ability to learn and grow and desire and modeling that to me is the number one thing that leaders who will be successful in this time and moving forward will have, both helping themselves get there, but then also creating a culture where that is the norm around learning and growing. I think Microsoft modeled that really well for us when Satya introduced the growth mindset culture. But the business models are changing like crazy, right? So the business model, every business model will be different tomorrow than in a few short years than it is today in most industries. But the other thing I would say is I've been helping the CEOs that I work with really work on being very clear on what are the behaviors that they want to see in their organization. And I'll give you maybe two examples. One of the CEOs I work with, she's incredible. I almost want to come out of my coaching business and go work for her. She's that incredible. And one of the things she talks about all the time is she's like, you know, we just need to be a more kind organization. We need to be a more kind organization. And sometimes when I talk to her, she shares a scenario where she, you know, recognizes that someone or some group in the organization wasn't being kind and she's frustrated. And one day I said to her, you know, are people not listening to you wanting to be kind, or are you just not being clear enough? Like, what does kind actually mean? You have to define that. What I think is kind might be different than what you think is kind, Christine. So we did some work together and created some definitions around the important behaviors that she wanted to see in the organization and a rollout. Similarly, another CEO was big on respect, you know, and you know, he was frustrated when, you know, and it turned out that for him being late to a meeting was a disrespectful thing. And I thought, man, thank goodness he didn't work at Microsoft. Like, we were late, 10 minutes late was like no big deal all the time, right? But how would I know that he felt that I was disrespecting him if I was a few minutes late when I was at a really important meeting, right? So I think leaders, the more that they can like create definitions for the behaviors they want to see, I think people will snap to that because they want to understand what good looks like inside an organization. And I think some of the behaviors should be ones that lean towards agility, towards growth mindset, which is, you know, trying new things, rewarding mistakes and then successes after that, things like that. There's actually a good book that I stole a lot of these ideas from by David Friedman called Culture by Design, I think it is. Mm-hmm. So anyway, if anybody's interested in diving more into that. But that to me is a critical skill a leader needs to have. Actually, don't assume. You have to be very, very specific around the behaviors you want to see in your organization.
Yeah, those are great examples. And I love the thought behind this is a anchor element I want in my culture. This is how we'll define it. How was in those situations, if it's gotten this far, how did they scale that? Because that's super, it's like success or failure, right? I mean, if it just stays with the direct report team and doesn't get down to every layer, it's more of, a dream, not reality.
It's a whole communication framework. In both cases where I've done this with clients, we worked with their internal communications. A 3-minute video of the CEO talking about that one fundamental, we called it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like we're kind and describing what that looks like and using an example that goes out in the newsletter. And then other like rituals that happen in this particular organization, a ritual happens like regular stand-up meetings before shift work. Mm-hmm. So you have to get it out there. One organization put together like a coffee table book and mailed it out to people. And and creating rituals in extended leadership team meetings where we actually talk about the fundamental of the month, you know, and mm-hmm. we talk about where that's showing up and coach that down, right? So it's interesting. It highlights where you see leaders at different levels of the organization that are embracing this and want to take it to their teams, and where you go to some teams and they're like, so what do you think of the fundamentals? And they're like, the what? You know, what are you talking about? But I think that I think if you're committed to it, you can root out where that resistance is and continue to embed it into the things that you do. So it's definitely a commitment.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Those are awesome examples for other leaders to think about. And certainly those aren't easily replicated by AI. What do you think about it?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think, how do you, first of all, when I do AI prompts and I'm getting better and better at my prompts, the best mm-hmm. advice somebody gave me, by the way, was don't do it like a Bing search or a Google search. Mm-hmm. Do it like you're talking to somebody. Like I would say, hey, Christine, I have this, you know, this meeting with my team. What ideas do you have for me? Like talk to it. Mm-hmm. But what I started noticing was I would get a response back and I'd be like, yeah, you know, well, a little less of this, a little more of this. And it would say to me, great idea, fantastic addition to what you just said. And I'm like, okay, a little less complimenting me. I don't really need that, but yes. So I'm like, but really? So then I started saying, but okay, now that we have this, it's 90% baked. Like, why wouldn't this work? Challenge me. Like, tell me why this is going to bomb, you know? And like,
right.
But anyway, to your point, no, AI can make us better, but these tools of compassion, clarity, alignment across the board, bringing people together, the tools can help you scale that. The tools can help you get, you know, message clearly, maybe with the productivity. But these are things that take the softer skills. And I think those are the ones that people will really value into the future.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. 100% agree. We need that. We need authentic and compassionate leadership more than ever as we look at how hard it is just day to day, just to do your job with everything that's coming at us in the world and life. And it's not easy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the level of simplification that is needed to bring it to fundamentals is also so important. And this expression, I didn't have time to make it simple, so I made it complex. It really resonates because there is still a lot of complexity we are dealing with. AI attempts to simplify it, but to bring it down to what it means for people and the accountability, because at the end of the day, I have a safety incident at my plant. I cannot blame AI and agents and machines for that, right? I am accountable. So for that type of accountability and designing the framework, processes, communication, people, talent around it is a huge amount of communication, influence, creativity, and strategic decisions that need to be made. And that's all human stuff.
Mm-hmm. All human stuff. I worry, I've started to pull on this one thread because I was seeing it over and over again in people I coached and even recognizing it in myself. I love XY axes. I don't know why. I just love that. And if you picture the X axis being curiosity and the Y axis being expertise, if you really think about it, when you're low on expertise about something, you are naturally pretty curious. You're like, oh, I better figure this out. You're doing searches, you're learning, you're reading books, you're talking to people. When we become experts, and you'll see like my line goes down. When we get more and more expertise, our curiosity tends to like drop off, right? We're just like, you know what? I've seen that movie before. You know, I'll say we've tried that before. We don't have to try new things. And I think this is probably the biggest thing that leaders need to be thinking about. How, as I'm an expert in my business, do I remain curious? What can we do better? What is what's the new thing? How is my business going to change? And how are all these changes impacting my people? How am I curious about others, which is probably the second thing, which is I really think an others-focused mindset is the other superpower that leaders really need to have. Whether we're talking about clients and customers, I'm thinking about you relentlessly because I need to understand what's going on in your world. How are your needs changing and adapting? And therefore, how can my business change and adapt to meet your needs? or an others focused mindset with your team? What's changing for them? How do I help prepare them for what's coming next, whether it be training opportunities or hiring new in? So I think like this other constant others focused mindset, and if it's pretty difficult not to be in a compassionate and empathetic mindset if you are in an others focused mindset, mm-hmm. right? We tend to like, I don't know. How many times, like, I like to think I'm not selfish, but how many times have I walked into a networking event and I'm like, okay, who do I want to see? Like, what's going to benefit me? Or I have my to-do list for the day. So anyway, I'm kind of rambling. I'm sorry. But I just think this focusing on others focused mindset, you learn a ton, your curiosity remains high, and you understand how to innovate for your customers or your team in ways that, you know, really creates successful business outcomes.
Yeah, that's a superpower. And if you think about any time you've had a major conflict with someone, if you took the time to sit or imagine even what's their point of view, their motivation, and then come to a discussion, usually those things get resolved very, really quickly.
Really
to your
quickly.
Point, you can't help but understand why. And, you know, be willing to figure things out when you have that other's mindset.
And this goes back to what Muge brought up earlier around how do you connect the dots around all these teams and bring mm-hmm. people together. Oftentimes there's conflict, you know, sales doesn't like what marketing is doing. And, you know, the product team thinks their product's great, yet sales isn't selling it. And if you can like really dive into what's really going on for you and you can fix some of those connections, man, that's where really important things start to happen. So
yeah,
all those
really,
human connections.
Really important. Yes, all the communication. And I think bringing the perspective of what does the customer need to accomplish? What is all of this in service of? So to your point, Jamie, about creating opportunity for others, that really changes the vantage point of the conversation. And in a way, it reduces anxiety too, because now all of a sudden you want to focus on here to create opportunity as opposed to, you know, advocating for my agenda.
That's right.
Yeah, love to do that. So as we wind down, what are the key takeaways, the key messages that we want to leave our audiences with?
We've covered a lot of ground, right?
We did.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Superpowers around the other's mindset, certainly top of mind. Thinking about systems design, and how you can understand and help others navigate change by understanding what they're losing. That was a big takeaway. And I think looking into the SCARF model could be interesting for people who might be going through those sort of transitions. And then really getting comfortable with AI as a tool that can help you build and execute without leaving your foundational elements that keep you strong, keep you differentiated, your authentic self, showing up and investing in creativity, agility, and growth mindset. Is there anything else that you think we should highlight, Jamie?
I think you nailed it, Christine. I would just say, and this is for leaders at every level that might be listening to this podcast, you know, we all have to learn and grow every single day. And it can be really uncomfortable. I'll share something very personal. I had an idea to start a podcast for 2.5 years before I actually launched it. Mm-hmm. I even told people about it. I told my family about it. And people would say, are you going to start your podcast? And I'd be like, oh, you know, I might. And when I really thought about it, I realized that the real reason why I wasn't doing it was because I was afraid to. I was afraid to put myself out there. I was afraid of the format. It's very different. What about all the techie stuff I have to do to deal with it? And as soon as I had that realization, then I was like, oh, no, I have to do it because I can't let this be the first time I'm afraid to do something. You know, it's the same thing with AI. It's the same thing with maybe trying out these new approaches with others' mindset or whatever is new and different for you. Change and agility is necessary. It's so necessary. And if you just tell yourself like I do, you know, I'm not as good as I will be tomorrow. I'm pretty darn good. Anybody would love to have me in the role I'm in, but you know, I'm not as good as I am tomorrow. What can I learn from anybody around me? What can I try this, you know, new AI stuff, you know, it's just going to make you better. And if you lead a team, if you are modeling the way for your team to do the same thing. And when you can start to unlock that for yourself, you'll find that the growth is actually pretty fun and scary, but also fun. And you'll see the innovation that it unlocks in your team. So I would just say jump in and get uncomfortable at least once a day.
Yeah. I think you just created a new t-shirt. I'm not as good as I am tomorrow. It's like, could be the new Nike slogan.
You know what? I will tell you, I say that a lot. And I think I like it so much because when I do screw up, I'm like, oh, well, that sucks. I don't like to screw up, but I'm going to be better tomorrow. So right. Of course I'm not as good as I will be tomorrow. And tomorrow's another day. It just lets me off the hook. It's a lovely feeling.
But it's also inspiring. I love it because it does mean there's more to do. There's more to experience. There's more to learn and certainly more fun to be had.
For sure. That's what I'm expecting. So.
All right. So Jamie, for people who may want to get in touch with you, I know you do keynote speaking, you're a fabulous keynote speaker, coaching. Is there a way that you'd like to have us direct our listeners?
I'm pretty simple. Probably the best way is to get in touch with me on LinkedIn. I'm Jamie Tazzi on LinkedIn. Connect with me there. Maybe I should get outside of my comfort zone and create other ways for you to connect with me, but that is not a priority for me right now. So LinkedIn is a great way. And I look forward just to hearing what you think about these ideas and exchanging ideas. I love doing that.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, we will wrap up. Thank you so much, Jamie.
Thank you.
It's always great to see your smiling face. Thanks so much. Until next time.
Great to connect.
Thank you for listening. Our hope is to spark a little joy, inspire, and educate our listeners in ways to live an even more meaningful life. If you have reactions to share from what you've heard, please visit our website, refirement.life, to leave a voice message. You may even be featured in a future episode. To keep in touch, subscribe to our podcast, Refirement Life, using the podcast player of your choice. Always remember, you are never too old to set a new goal or to dream a new dream. Thanks again for joining us on this episode. Until next time.